Chapter 9. Falling for Signs. Sean woke with a jolt, which was rather unfortunate because the selfsame jolt technically didn't belong to him, but rather to a person whom he had just occupied. Just like when you grab someone else's parking space, it is never a smooth process. And thus armed with a new momentum, the chandelier started swinging. Despite his barbecuesque tenure, Sean tried to focus on what turned out to be cathedral walls and columns as they swung into and out of what little focal power he still had claim to. Little did he know that he had just inspired one of the most important scientific observations of all time, a candlelit winner, so to speak. Far from the ideal, which would have been to have arrived as unobtrusively as a cockle on shore leave, he found he had achieved the complete opposite, for within seconds he had scores of people making direct references to him in a manner congruent to the obligation they were under to dodge the hail of hot wax and flaming candles. Pretty soon a ladder was being shoved under his flailing feet, and he managed to clamber down to face several dozen immediate zone indignants.
"Sacrilege!" screamed a well-known pew-jumper.
"Must be a heretic!
Burn the heretic!"
"Yeah, burn him till he's sorry."
"But I am sorry," Sean squeaked out.
A voice was heard coming from behind it all.
"Make way! I am a doctor of theology."
The indignant mass parted into the pews of the cathedral, leaving the priest facing Sean, the knave in the nave.
"How sorry are you, evil sinner?"
he screamed at his badly nibbled index finger extended towards the terrified Sean.
"Oh, really sorry, sir."
"Call me father."
"Father?"
"Yes," the priest shrugged. "It's relative."
"Okay, dad."
"Really, really sorry?"
"Yes, really, really sorry. Cross my fingers, hope not to die."
After relishing the dramatic attention for all it was worth, the priest turned to his flock and announced,
here he cants, by the sacred knobbly knees of his holiness, he is saved."
The crowd made a quickly improvised multipart harmony on the vowel ooh, in appropriate awesome amazement at the undeniable miracle. Then one had the initiative to lead a polite applause, thusly self-satisfied and reinforced in their suspicions about the true workings of the universe. They began to move away, leaving Sean trying to claw the shards of reality back into some sort of more familiar jumble. The cleaning equipment and his soggy, dirty clothes informed him of what his host had likely been doing up the ladder before his sudden arrival had caused him to fall onto the chandelier. The fallen bucket confirmed his guess, since on it was written, "Property of GSE, the Grovelshaw Ecclesiastical Cleaning Service." The crowd had all moved away, that is, except one. This was a young man in his mid-twenties, middling to ogreish in features, and a nose that would be quite a liability should the owner ever visit a chip factory. He was holding his wrist and looking up from it at the still swinging chandelier, and then back to his wrist.
"Excuse me, sir, what are you doing?" asked Sean.
"Shh, I'm counting."
After a while the man stopped counting the swings, looked pleased with himself, and did something, "That's enough for now," under the cavernous sleeve of his robe. Sean could have sworn he heard the faintest of beeps. Then the young man started down the aisle towards the exit. Sean followed him outside the enormous Duomo. They crossed the wide grassy lawn that separated the basilica from something Sean recognized immediately. This was a beautifully ornate tower, familiar by its outrageous lean with respect to more standard reality.
"Excuse me, sir,"
Sean called after the hurrying figure in its long, seriously untailored robe.
"But are you Mr. Galileo?"
Without breaking his pace, the man said over his shoulder,
"The Right of Honorable Galileo Galilei, at your service. My friends call me Lily, so do my enemies, for that matter. And who are you, may I ask?"
Sean Solpierre, of Lugano."
"Lugano?"
This had gained Galileo's attention, and he stopped to examine the young man Sean was occupying.
"So, Jean Solpierre, how is it that you do know me?"
"Well, you're so famous, except that I expected you to be an old man. You're always old in the portraits."
"I think you are taking off the mickey with me. I am but a poor paper-front writer of little benown and fewer prospects. On that subject, do you have any money? I'm a bit hard up this decade.
Sean felt his pockets and pulled out half a scudo worth of copper coins.
Yes. Then let us take off refreshment at the Hard Mock Bean House.
He led the way down the main drag, leading to the centre of the university town.
I always go there to slip in a bit of sagacity midweek, before the weekend crowds hit the philosophy wells.
Sean skipped after him. Did you say paper front, writer? Don't you mean paper back?
A good idea. These days, with paper prices the way they are, wood shortages, you see, with all the heretic burning, it would indeed be a good idea to economize and be a paper front and back writer. Thanks for the tip. But in any case, nobody reads anything I write.
Galileo's crest fell a commensurate notch.
Oh, don't say that. One day you'll be a best-selling author, and you will change the history of science forever.
I bet you say that to all the sages. But you're wrong. There's no demand for my stuff. There is no flexibility at all in the market. It is all controlled by the big Aristotle multi-corpus syndicates. Has been for millennia. Why would it suddenly change now? In desperation, I've applied to be a professor of mathematics at the University of Pisa, but I'm having trouble with the Aristotle crowd who vote for the astrologer of the month.
Astrologer? But you are a mathematician.
Same thing. They hate everything I write. And to be a scholar, you have got to publish papers, and the best papers have something written on them.
They entered the Hard Mock Bean House, as smoky a den of idlers as there's ever likely to be. Columns of coffee reek stood here and there around the many philosophy-stained tables. Galileo and Sean were gradually joined at the table by students.
My job, explained Galileo, the underpaid and depreciated tutor, if I'm elected mathematics professor, is to twist the universe to fit the church's version, tell astrological forecasts, and sweep the lower floor corridor twice a week.
One student had arrived shortly. This is because he was less than 5 feet tall. The richer students were dressed in robes of circumstantial pomp, while the poorer ones were distracted, their heads bowed in concentration, their hands under their sleeves, their lips murmuring something.
What are they doing?
Wristwatches,
answered the demi-dwarf, whose name in fact turned out to be Didi.
Wristwatches, exclaimed Sean triumphantly to Galileo. So I was right. You are wearing the watch.
Sure, answered Didi for him. We all have one, don't you?
All the students pulled their sleeves back to reveal bare wrists.
I used to, said Sean, uncertainty having an absolute field day on his forehead.
You see, clocks, even the finest Swiss sundials, are rubbish at measuring any time interval less than a minute,
explained Galileo, but notably without revealing his own wrist.
The wristwatch technique involves keeping an eye on the time by counting the pulse beat, the most accurate time-measuring instrument known to man.
But, Galileo, I was sure you had a...
time-measuring instrument? Yes, I do.
Didi interjected quickly.
Lily, is this wise? It is supposed to be a secret.
I think we can trust John.
Galileo looked around the tables to be sure nobody outside their group was watching, and then pulled back his sleeve to reveal.
What on earth is that?
Exclaimed Sean, his flabber by this stage totally gasted.
Shush, shushed Galileo. It's still in development. I don't want any spies from the Padua University to see it yet. I know they are close to a breakthrough in time technology. I am trying to get them to headhunt me out of this place.
But what is it?
Sean looked at the extraordinary instrument. Though quite bulky, it somehow strapped onto the wrist, and was surmounted by what appeared to be a miniature pendulum.
I call it the Pulsilogium.
The Pulsihooligan? Laughed Sean. That's the dumbest name I've ever heard since sacked Grumpy Cupboard head-on.
There was an uncomfortable silence from everybody. Sean followed their gazes to the instrument and saw, to his irresistible if eventual amusement, that the frame was in fact an exact rhombicuboctahedron with its unmistakable football look. Galileo explained.
It's an automatic pulse reader, tapping into the power of the rhombi to amplify the pulse, regulated by the pendulum, patent pending. Provide highly accurate time measurements.
Does it work? Asked Sean, in the grips of a made-to-order form of mental dislocation. Didi nodded. While you are living, yes. otherwise the dead inaccurate.
So this doesn't help, does it? Said Sean. Dead people are pulseless.
Yes. To jump the purgatory timeout queue, your pulse would need to be pretty special. You could say, of holy blood.
Sang real, in other words, said Galileo, studying Sean's reaction very carefully.
Obviously satisfied about something, he suddenly changed the subject.
The students and I play an interactive game.
To be safe, we first set up a firewall, said Didi.
How do you mean, firewall? Asked Sean, confused about so many things he'd given up any system of prioritizing them.
Fame on one side,
flame on the other. Warm into the idea now?
I am indeed, nodded Sean, getting to like more and more his eccentric new friends.
We call it mundi secundi, second world, said Galileo. Students create second personae, and we live in a fantasy world in which, instead of the earth being fixed in a firmament and everything else rotating around it, or as the church thinks, around it, it is a rock that, get this, flies around the sun. And not only that, but,
he leaned forward to whisper,
the rock rotates on its own.
Happy with the scandal, he sat back.
That's where we get the nickname of the Rock and Rollers, said Didi.
Galileo chuckled and continued.
Through the firewall medium, we can make concerted rock proposals, called rock concerts. It's the only chance we get to meet the chicks.
Chicks? Cried out Sean in his latest edition of surprise.
Sure, Galileo shrugged back. The church iconoclasts. We follow Copernicus's teaching that the sun is immobile and it is the earth that moves around it. Our slogan is, we can move it, yes we can.
He stood up and said,
would you accompany me to my workshop? I have something I think will interest you.